This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to the basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
You're listening to the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network. I'm your host, Jason Staples. We got a big show today talking about the Texas State game. We're going to do our Texas State review. We're going to do one segment on the Florida State offense, one segment on the defense, and then we'll wrap it up. But I wanted to take a little bit of time on the a little bit of time before doing this reactions podcast for this first game to get a chance to look more closely at what was going on the field. I mean, with it being Texas State. With it being a team that they're not very good. To be honest, it's not a great football team. I wanted to get a chance to see what we could really get out of it. And so, a little bit later in the week than normal for these than what we'll do for these reaction podcasts over the course of the rest of the year. But I think we've got a decent handle on what Florida State actually showed against Texas State this week. And I think first conclusion is that there's a lot to be encouraged by if you're a Florida State fan. I think this team, it's clearly a flawed football team. And just like last year's was a flawed football team, and every team basically in the country has some flaws. Even Ohio State against Virginia Tech showed a few warts. Their warts aren't that many of them on that team. But this team, I think, it already is showing that it's just a different kind of team, a different unit than what we saw last year. And I think the best way to kind of compare what we saw against Texas State in this opener to last year, to what we've seen from Florida State in the previous years, is to think about last year's game against an opening game against a cupcake. So they had the opener against Oklahoma State. You can't really compare that one because Oklahoma State's just, they've got more talent. They're better than Texas State. But the second game, Florida State last year, if you remember, played the Citadel. That's an FCS team. They are significantly inferior to Texas State. And last year's Florida State team did not blow out the Citadel. Last year's game was 37-12, if you remember. And the defense gave up 4.6 yards per play on the game. The offense was just under 8 yards per play. So 37-12 in the cupcake game against the Citadel in that opening cupcake game against an FCS team. Now, Texas State is significantly better than the Citadel. Significantly. I mean, Texas State really, they're more like a MAC team. This is a Sun Belt team. A pretty good offense, probably a top 60 or so offense in the country. They're better on offense than Syracuse, at least. So they've got some stuff to throw at you. And this year, you've got an absolute blowout in this game against a team that, and really Florida State made it a laugher. It looked like a high school team at times, Florida State's offense against Texas State's defense, in a way that really even against the Citadel last year, it didn't look like that at any point. It didn't look like it was just totally easy. And there were times where, particularly Dalvin Cook running over the left side, this game looked laughably easy. 59-16 over Texas State. The defense only gave up 4 yards per play. That's pretty good. Even against a mid-level offense, that's pretty good. Top 60 or so offense, that's good, giving up 4 yards per play. And the offense went for 8.71 yards per play. And that's on a very run-heavy a steady diet of running the football. So that's a lot to be encouraged by just off the top. Is one of the signs of good teams is that you dominate who you're supposed to dominate. And last year, that team, obviously, you don't win 29 games in a row, and that team won 12 games in a row. Last year's team, and then you combine that with the prior years, you get 29, but you don't win 12 games in a row if you're not a good football team, a really good football team. But they weren't a great football team, and you could see that at points in how they didn't put teams away or blow teams out that they should have. This team immediately stepped forward, and this game was a blowout by the second quarter. So, there, I mean, it was laughable by the second quarter. And you could see there was no chance. And that's a change. That's something that I think you can be encouraged about, that this team already showed that it can take care of business, particularly because in the run game, last year against the Citadel, that offensive line was already struggling at the center position. You look at Barron and Hofeld last year, were struggling against an FCS defensive line. There were times where that FCS defensive line was getting penetration against the Florida State running game. They couldn't just run away. They couldn't just run the ball at will against an FCS team in the Citadel last year. I mean, they averaged six yards a carry overall. They had a few big plays to do that, but it was not dominant. Whereas this year, again, against Texas State, their defense is, you know, it's not a you're not going to write home about playing this defense. This is probably a 90s, you know, or below. This is bottom quartile of the country on defense. They were really bad, but they averaged 6.49 yards per carry. And again, they're a better defense, even as a bad FBS team, they're a better defense than what Florida State played against the Citadel last year and struggled more with. And you think about the center of the offensive line, it looked significantly better this year. I'm still, you know, there's still some room for concern with Corey Martinez getting beaten a couple times. You know, there are a couple places where, you know, the Texas State nose tackle got the better of him, but they weren't that frequent. But it is enough to suggest that, you know, he's not going to be able to single block your better defensive tackles in the country. I think this week against USF, against Dedrin Senat, is going to say a little bit more about what we can expect there at that center position. But at any rate, I thought the offensive line looked pretty good. That left side is, as Wayne McGahee III from Noel Digest has said, it's a force of nature. Those guys are really good. And the right side, I thought, played pretty well. Brock Rubel is, you know, he struggled a few times. There are places where he's a year away from really being ready. But, you know, I think once Kelly gets his ankle healthy and so on, then we're probably going to see him back at right tackle, which is where he was during camp. But Wilson Bell, I thought, played pretty well. He played very well. Got to the second level, was dominant against defensive tackles, both in combo blocking and single blocking. Did a lot that you wanted to see. And the other thing is that I think should be very encouraging for Florida State fans is just the way the offense looked in general. You know, there'd been some concern among some quarters and this podcast, and I had not really shared that concern, that Jimbo Fisher would still insist on running, quote unquote, his offense. In terms of, you know, really wanting to pitch the ball around the yard and not recognize that this offense needed to be very run heavy and not change things up for Everett Golson the way that he needed to. I have been very adamant after having spent time with Fisher back when he was an offensive coordinator, getting a chance to really learn the way that he thinks. I've been very convinced that he would get it and that he was getting it and that they would be a very different offense. We talked about that in one of our podcasts last week. This was going to be a very different offense, that they were going to run more spread option packages with, you know, bubble screens packaged in there. That would be how they do some of their, some of the checks at the line there, and that they would run the football a ton and that we would see, more of a we'd see probably this team average in the range of 40 rushing attempts per game. Well, they were at 41 in this game, and there weren't actually that many plays. The game, you know, was relatively short in terms of how many plays there were, and that they wouldn't throw much in the way of drop back stuff, that they'd throw down the field off play action, and then they'd, you know, work the edges and the short stuff and on some boots and things to use Golson's feet. And that's precisely what we saw. And I think, you know, the interesting thing was, you know, they could have made this a passing scrimmage because Texas State's defense is not very good. And, you know, Golson and these guys need some time to get better on the passing side, but they didn't. And I think the reason for that, at least they didn't until they got up three scores. And I think the reason for that is that Jimbo Fisher wanted to establish who this team would be, what kind of offense this team would be. And he said basically as much in his post-game interview, in the post-game press conference, that he wanted to come out and really set the tone for the year on this being a physical, run-oriented offense, which really is what he's wanted at Florida State. But, you know, when you've got quarterbacks like Jameis Winston, you know, rolling through town and you don't have the dominant pieces, the pieces to be a dominant rushing attack just yet, on the offensive line and really in the backfield, then you can't do that. They've got those pieces now. Now it would be ideal to have all that plus a Jameis Winston, but they have the pieces to be the more physical offense that he wants to be. But he wanted to establish who this team would be in that first half. And they did that. They came out and they ran the football and they ran the football and they ran the football. And then they threw to the backs. And you know, this is where Bud Elliott from Tomahawk Nation has, you know, he opposed an idea that earlier this year that he wanted to see basically a 2-to-1 ratio of running back touches to wide receiver touches on the year, and that he would look at that as basically the proper balance for this team, given the strengths of this team, for, you know, to show that Jimbo Fisher understood what was going on. Well, in this game, it was almost a 3-to-1 ratio. It was like 2.9-to-1. I think Bud and I were talking yesterday, and he was saying, I think they charted it at 34 touches by running backs versus 12 touches by receivers. That's the kind of ratio that you want to see this year. Now, that's not going to hold up in every game. That's not going to hold up against teams that can stop the run a little bit, but that is pushing in the range of what you want to see. I mean, it's you know, even more tilted toward the running backs than what you're going to expect over the course of the year. But it's pretty clear that Jimbo Fisher already recognizes, and this isn't a moment for an I told you so, I told you, that he understands what this offense needs to be, and he's already been building this offense toward what it needs to be in that regard. And it has and came out to dictate that. Now, the one thing that did surprise me is how much ace too tight they ran. They had two tight ends on the field with Jeremy Kerr and Ryan Izzo on the field quite a bit. Now, you know, I've talked in the past about how much Jimbo Fisher likes that formation, but I really thought they might be about a year away from using that set as much as they did. But they used it a lot, and they had Maven Saunders and Izzo on the field at other points. They used it a lot. And it'll be interesting to see if that tracks over the rest of the year, if they continue to use that set. They ran really well out of it. And those tight ends, Izzo and Kerr in particular, really blocked well on the edge. Now, again, they're going against overmatched competition. It'll be interesting to see what happens beyond that. But this is a team that on that outside zone, when you can mash the edge with the tight end on the outside zone, particularly when you've got, you know, that left side that you can do tons of stuff with, on the offensive line, that it's going to be very difficult even for good defenses to stop that outside zone for Florida State. And the other thing is, as that right side gets a little bit better, then what you start doing is you start running that outside zone to the right and letting that left side serve as cutoff blocks on the backside. And because they're so dominant on the backside, that sets up some ridiculous cutback lanes. Now you're looking at taking that outside zone, setting the flow, and a guy like Cook or Pender cutting straight up the middle of the field where you've got a huge running lane right up the field behind the center and running free straight up the field. I mean, this is what you saw back in the West Virginia days when Rick Trickett was back at West Virginia with Steve Slayton and some of those guys, some of the rushing lanes on the cutbacks on that outside zone and some of the zone read stuff that they did up there under Rich Rod. I think that's the kind of thing that you'll probably see more from Florida State this year. I think that offensive line left a lot to be encouraged about, even though this is inferior competition. Now this week against USF, because of some of the bodies that they have up front, and they were pretty good stopping the run last year. And then particularly next week against Boston College is going to say more. Will this team be able to establish the run? If this team can establish the run, like, you know, anywhere like this against a Boston College, and to a lesser extent against USF, we'll be able to know a lot more about what this team can do and what, where they're at. But overall, I think there's a lot to be encouraged about on that end, and it'll be interesting to see how Fisher handles that against a little bit better fronts. Now, in terms of Everett Golson, I thought Golson, you know, it was interesting also. They got Golson on the edge, you know, early on, you know, with some roles and some play action stuff, and that's what I expect. But I think even when they didn't do that, I thought Golson was okay. He threw it well. He certainly threw it well, but there were some kinks in the decision-making process. There were a couple times where he read the wrong side of the field. Fisher mentioned that in his weekly TV show. But I thought he was okay. I thought it was a good opening game. Basically getting comfortable, getting some rhythm. And he made good decisions, even when he wasn't necessarily reading the right side of the field initially. He made some good decisions in the passing game and didn't make any throws that made you worry. And that's what you're hoping for at this point from a guy who's a graduate transfer and has to grow over the course of the season. Now, I did think it was interesting that they waited until Sean McGuire got on the field to run some of the other stuff that they've really been repping a lot in practice with Golson, that we'll see more with Golson. But I don't think they wanted to show it with Golson. And that's some of that spread option stuff. Some of those packages with wide receiver screens on the outside and some of that. They ran a lot more of that stuff once Sean McGuire got on the field. And you'll see quite a bit of it when Golson is playing against better defenses. You're going to see a lot of spread option, a lot of read option, and then you're going to see a lot of wide receiver running game. I think that's one of the reasons that Kermit Whitfield was getting so much talk in camp, is the amount of jet sweep action and inverted veer with something going to the running back there, or with something going to the slot receiver coming around there. And some of the motion where the slot receiver becomes the pitch man in essentially a triple option out of the spread, that stuff that you're going to see this year with Whitfield being that speed guy. And again, you get that guy he looks like 2013 Whitfield. This is not 2014 Kermit, not fat Kermit. This is fast Kermit. That was pretty obvious on the kickoff returns. You get that guy on the edge with the football in the option game three or four times a game, one of them's going to go for a while. He's going to make a big play or two out of that. So that's something else that I think we saw some hints of late in the game that they didn't really show, but they will show that later. And I thought there was a lot to be encouraged by. Like I said, on the offensive side, we'll know a lot more over the next 2 weeks because of the step up in the quality of defenses, first with USF and then with a very good run defense in Boston College. The good thing is that neither of those teams is really likely to be able to challenge Florida State across the board. They're able to challenge FSU a little bit more in those areas, so you learn more about that side of the football. And again, you're listening to the Unconquered podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network. And we're going to go ahead and shift over to the second segment where we're going to cover the defensive side of the football. And this is where I think we could get a little bit more improvement. We could see more improvement more obviously from last year. We could get a little bit more of a view of what is actually happening on defense, because Texas State has a legitimately good offense. You know, this is just like a lot of these teams that are playing MAC teams where, you know, the famous MAC-tion where these teams are scoring 50 and 60 points in their conference. Those, you know, even when you shut down one of those MAC offenses, you're doing something pretty decent on defense. Even though their talent level is a little bit lower, they're good offenses. And this was a good offense. It's not a great offense. It's, you know, in that middle tier. You know, it's toward the top of the third quartile or, you know, bottom of the second quartile nationally. But that's a quality offense. They're not having problems with execution and so on. And they have a few athletes on that offense. It's just Florida State made them look bad. The Florida State defense actually looked pretty good in this game. The biggest thing I think that stuck out was the effort level. The effort level was much, much better. The energy level on defense was much better. You saw much more swarming to the football, guys flying around. much more than you did at any point last year. Fewer solo tackles, a lot more situations where you would see a guy in space, and then you'd see textbook stuff. You'd see the outside contained guy in his proper position, the inside contained guy in his proper position, and the guy running the alley in between him making the tackle, and then they all converge. And that's what you've got to see. And you saw that a ton in 2013. You didn't see it as much last year. And this year you saw that. And you saw guys relishing contact. And I think the biggest thing is, and we talked about this last week, this team needed to take on a personality of leadership, of their leadership. And to me, it looks like this team has started to take on Jalen Ramsey's personality, at least on defense. Last year's team suffered for having Jameis Winston's personality, and then the defense really lacked any leadership at all. It was rudderless. This year's team, I think, is starting to take on that Jalen Ramsey character, where Ramsey, unlike some of the guys who were high draft pick possibilities going into last year, Ramsey's not money motivated. That kid is motivated by domination. He wants to dominate the guy across from him. He wants to embarrass the guy across from him. And you could see that was kind of the approach of particularly the secondary, but of the defense in general. They were flying around a lot better than they were last year. Some other things that I noticed were some changes, as we talked about in what we were predicting in terms of what we'd heard and some different things coming out of practice. In the way that this defense was going to work, the biggest thing beyond a different effort level is that I thought the substitution packages and where guys were placed at different points in different positions for different situations was significantly better than what we saw last year. So we saw more players play. I mean, I think they played 12 or 13 defensive linemen, significant snaps. I mean, I'm not talking about just a few garbage snaps. They played 11 or 12 defensive linemen in the first half. And they did it situationally. They put guys in positions where they could actually do what they were asking them to do. You know, okay, well, this is a running down, so we're going to put these guys in because they're going to stack it up against the run. This is our package against more of a passing situation. They did a lot of that situational substitution. And I particularly liked the defensive line package on passing downs, moving Giorgio Newberry, who slimmed down just a little bit and looks significantly better than he did last year. Although late last year, I was hearing from practice that Newberry was actually showing some good signs, and there was a little bit of puzzlement, actually, from what I was hearing on why Newberry wasn't actually playing a little bit toward the end of the year, because he had something to offer on the defensive interior that they were lacking. And he really didn't play then at all. So I wasn't sure whether we were actually going to see him this year. But it looks like that change has been made, and that he is going to be on the field a little bit this year and can contribute. And the main thing is that defensive line package on passing downs looked terrific with him, with Giorgio Newberry and DeMarcus Walker, together on the defensive line. I thought that was a much better package. They got a lot of pressure out of that package. And again, not against great bodies up front, but they were able, with some of the defensive tackle stunts that they were able to use with those guys, both of whom are, you know, 280, 290, with Walker at 282 or so, and Newberry in 285, 290 range, those guys actually able to show some explosiveness on the interior and compress the pocket, do some things with the defensive tackle stunts in the pass rush to get to the quarterback. Those things made a nice difference. And then you, on the outside, they had Josh Sweat, and Jacob Pugh, on the outside there. And a couple occasions they had the third stringer since Featherston's not there. They had Casher out there as well. But with that group, you're going to get a lot more pressure on passing downs. I think that was obvious. There are a few times where they probably should have had sacks. Sweat missed a tackle in the backfield where he had a chance for his first sack. But they got a lot of pressure when they didn't get sacks, and that was a really encouraging thing for a team that struggled mightily to get any sort of pressure last year, even against the Citadel, even against bad teams. They didn't get a whole lot of pressure on the quarterback, and they were able to do that in this game. I thought LaMarcus Brutus, who you know we knew had gained some weight, looked much better. Looked more like a legitimate safety in a good defense than just a guy. He was able to come in and lay the lumber at times. You could see he was interested in separating guys from the football and interested in making good contact. And that's something you need to have. The one thing he's always been able to do is play center field very well. And now, with a little bit of extra size, he hasn't lost any of his range. He's always had good range. With a little bit of that extra size, now he's able to come up and do some things against the run. He's more reliable in that role, and he's a little bit more, you know, you're going to have guys here in footsteps a little bit more because of the way he's able to lay the lumber there. Andrews looked terrific, as always, in the money role. They did a lot in that six defensive back package. And I thought Tyler Hunter looked more comfortable at the star position. I also thought Hunter played freer, played more physical than he did last year. Last year, Hunter was pretty tentative, and you could see at times, it looked to me, especially first 9-10 games of last year, it looked to me like Hunter was always kind of trying to protect his neck. He played tentative. He didn't come up and hit guys the way that he did when he was a sophomore, when he was a freshman. And I thought we saw a little bit more of the old Tyler Hunter in this game. And I think he can potentially be a pretty good player at that star position. We'll see a little bit more as we play teams that can challenge him a little bit out there, but I thought he looked more comfortable. And then, of course, Trey Marshall is a weapon on the blitz. He's in more, again, against more rundowns. He was very, very good at that star position. Actually was a little reminiscent in terms of when he did blitz. Looked a lot like LaMarcus Joyner coming out of that position with a little bit of that compact body, but explosive and bending the edge. And getting to the quarterback quickly, or you know, converging on the run play very quickly from that role, looked reminiscent of what we saw a couple of years ago with Joyner at that position. You know, he's not that in the passing game, but I think between the two of them, that's pretty good. But Marquez White was actually my defensive player of the game. I thought he played. He was better than I expected, and I'd been hearing good things about him. We'd all been hearing good things about him coming out of camp, but he looked very good at that other cornerback position. And this is not just an athletic thing. I mean, we all knew that Marquez White was a terrific athlete, and particularly now that he's gotten a little bit stronger and gained some weight. But what stuck out to me was how quickly he was diagnosing things. He was able to get a sense of where plays were going. He was reading routes. He was reading blocking schemes. He was reading all that stuff quickly and was getting off blocks and getting to bubble screens, getting to backs in the flat. He was getting to outside runs and all that in a way that really was better than what you saw from that position last year with Ronald Darby, who's more talented. He's a, you know, one of the, I think maybe the best or the second best cover corner prospect going into last year's draft, but you didn't get a whole lot of effort out of him at times. And certainly there were times where, you know, if there were, the biggest weakness in Darby's game was precisely that ability to read routes and diagnose quickly. Well, Marquez White, that's what he did really, really well in this game. And if he's going to play like that all year, this secondary is going to be really, really good, because obviously the guy on the other side's a monster. You're not supposed to be able to do in a cover two situation what he did, passing off a wide receiver, and then he should have actually had the interception, but getting both hands on a play, on a throw into that seam, you're not supposed to be able to do that. But Ramsey does a lot of things you're not supposed to be able to do. That's just disgusting. It's sick to be able to do the stuff that guy can do. But you put a quality corner like White on the other side. If he's going to play like that on the other side, now you've got really, really good corners on each side. And now you can do some things in terms of scheme, and you can have some freedom with your safeties, because you know that those guys on the outside are quality corners. Gives you a lot of leeway. So that was very, very encouraging. Now, on the other side, on the flip side, there were a couple things that were potentially worrying. I thought the defensive tackles overall were just a little softer than what you'd prefer to see at times. There were a few plays where, particularly against double teams, Derek Nnadi was he didn't anchor as well as what you'd like to see, and not in the way that he is certainly capable of. There were a few places where Niall Lawrence-Stample, again, didn't anchor quite as well as what you'd like to see. And there was one play where they midline optioned him and ran it for 20 yards because he was unblocked and didn't recognize that he was being optioned and didn't get himself into position to spill the quarterback to another player for a tackle or at least slow him down. You've got to play better than that as a senior. At the same time, there were a lot of bodies and a lot of guys that continued to show potential. I thought Christmas looked pretty good physically, looked like he's starting to get it. I thought Arthur Williams stuck out as a his body sticks out on the field anyway. He's a huge man. There were some defensive tackles that showed reason for some optimism there as they're developing, but they're certainly not where you'd like to see him at that point. And the linebackers were good. They were fine. I thought Lorenzo Phillips looked like a guy who needs to be on the football field sooner rather than later. I think we're going to see more of him as the year goes on because of he is a better athlete at this point than post knee injury Reggie Northrop, who will be the main guy there. But there'll be some situations where against teams with a little bit more speed in the backfield or passing a little bit more on first down, you might see a little bit more Lorenzo Phillips later in the year. But I think that's where they're much more willing to substitute like that than they were last year. Now, special teams were a wreck overall. The punt return situation was a mess. Punting was, it was Case and Beatty. And even Aguayo struggled a little bit on kickoffs. I think he was just trying to kick it out of the end zone a little bit. And that's been a weakness of his where, sometimes he's gone a little bit too hard at balls and you see him go out of bounds at times, but that'll get better. But the positive there is that kickoff returns are back with Ramsey and the reemergence of Fast Kermit. So this team, it's got a chance. I think right now this is a 3 or 4 loss team with the chance to become significantly better than that as the year progresses. I think this team, at this point, this team has a viable chance to become a playoff team. The pieces are potentially there based on what I saw. They're just not quite there. They're not quite ready. Question is whether they're going to be ready by the time this team plays a losable game. That's really where we're at this point. But it's going to be really interesting to see the development. It's going to be very interesting the next couple weeks. We're going to have a lot to talk about over the next couple weeks. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Now, before we get out of here, just a reminder, you can follow me on the Twitter machine at Doc Staples and, of course, Seminole Sports Radio at Seminole Sports Radio for the latest on Florida State sports. And, of course, you can make sure to catch our next podcast, which will be a preview of the USF Florida State game. As always, I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, a Sporto channel. Thanks for listening. I made this.